Restony Radio presents Genesis, Volume 1 of Commentaries on the Pentateuch by Russus John Restony, narrated by Jeremy Walker, produced with permission by the Chalcedon Foundation. Chapter 1, Genesis 1, The Source, Genesis 1, 1-31. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth was without form and void, and the darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, Let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and the evening and the morning were the first day. And God said, Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning were the second day. And God said, Let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas, and God saw that it was good. And God said, Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself, upon the earth, and it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, and the herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself, after his kind, and God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the third day. And God said, Let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. And he made the stars also. And God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and to rule the day and the darkness of the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the fourth day. And God said, Let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life, and the fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. And God created great whales, and every living creature that moveth, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters of the seas, and let the fowl multiply on the earth. And the evening and the morning were the fifth day. And God said, Let the earth bring forth the living creature after his kind, cattle and the creeping thing, and the beast of the earth after his kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So God created man in his own image, and the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, Be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. And God said, Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree, in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Genesis 1, 1-31. If Christianity does not take Genesis 1 very seriously and literally, it is suicidal. The foundation of its faith has been effectively undermined, and whatever claims the church make for its faith are undercut and devolved. The source of things is all important. If the triune God by his sovereign and just acts created all things, then all things are derivative from God's act, dependent upon his being, and subject to his total government and predestination. If God is the creator, he is also the determiner and lawgiver. If the universe was, quote, created, unquote, by an accident, out of nothing, then nothing external to it can determine it. Whatever possibility there is of any determination in the cosmos must then come from that cosmos. The title of a book published in the mid-20th century and long in print, Man Makes Himself by V.G. Child, states that matter clearly. If the origin of things is from within the cosmos, then, possibly, the control of all things can come from something within the cosmos. This faith leads to man playing God, to man attempting to control evolution, to a belief in a world state controlling all things, and to religious belief in the powers of time and process. Evolution is a belief that violates a variety of scientific concepts. It posits spontaneous generation, the emergence of something out of nothing, miraculous changes such as a non-I somehow becoming an I, and so on. For God's creative act, it substitutes time and process and endows both with godlike powers. Somehow, the mindless churnings of process for billions of years works amazing miracles. Somehow, out of total nothing, a single atom emerged, and that single atom had all the potentialities of a universe. In brief, it had amazing, godlike powers. Evolution requires belief in miracles greater than any described in the Bible. It is not only the faith of those who hate God, but also of those whose premises are irrational ones. The issue is process versus act, and the difference is a vast one. If the source of being is process, then very important things flow necessarily from that fact. Process originates in an ultimate nothingness, and then a chaos, out of which the cosmos evolved. Given such a premise, the source of power must be from below. Anti-Christian scholars make much of the witchcraft trials in Christendom. These came with the Renaissance and its humanism. They were a product of a reviving faith in the power from below. Faithful Christian thinking sees power, which is in the Christian world is essentially grace, as coming from above, from the triune God. Man must look above for the source of grace, mercy, love, power, and more. Such a faith will logically regard any power from below as impotent and predestined to defeat. A strong and faithful belief in creation by the triune God in 6 days will regard all powers other than this God of Scripture as derivative, limited, and totally circumscribed by God's decree of predestination. It is not a natural process which determines all things, but rather the triune God. Nothing occurs apart from His will and determination. The seasons, the weather, time, and all things else serve Him in the telling words of the prophet Zechariah. Zechariah 10:4. Out of Him came forth the corner, out of Him the nail, out of Him the battle bow, and out of Him every oppressor together. While Zechariah's immediate reference here is God's messianic purpose in and through Israel, it means also that God's planning or predestination includes and circumscribes all things. A predestinarian faith cannot long endure without a strict creationism. The issue is process versus act. Our choice is important. If the truth be process, power and grace come from below. Not surprisingly, the culture of evolutionism has led to a revival of occultism and magic. Magic is the belief that power resides in the natural world and is amenable to control by man. Non-biblical sciences are closely related to magic and represent sophisticated versions thereof. Magic is a search for lawless power. When geneticists talk of genetic engineering, their ideas at times are more related to magic than medicine. If we recognize God as the Creator, then for us the source of all power, grace, law, and morality is from above. Situational ethics is then for us evil in his attempt to play God. Virtue for us in the sense of strength and morality is from God alone, not man. An evolutionary premise in faith will mean that we seek virtue from below. Quite logically, Emil Durkheim, in The Rules of Sociological Method, saw the criminal as an evolutionary pioneer. Durkheim, in terms of his faith, saw first the criminal as a potent force because he came from below, from the underworld of man, and second, he saw the criminal as the vanguard of man's evolutionary future because the criminal challenges the existing order. The evolutionist will logically see virtue and power as emanating from below. In practical terms, he will favor those who are socially from below. He will see virtue in criminals, in street people, in ghetto blacks, but not in Japanese because they excel, and he will work for criminal rights, feminism, and so on and on. The result is the religion of revolution. Revolutions, usually the work of anti-Christian intellectuals, are done in the name of the people, by which is meant those socially at the bottom level. These supposedly incarnate virtue, which must come from below. Revolutions have been either pagan, as the 5th century AD Mazdaic revolution in Persia, which made all property, money, and women into common property, or they are anti-Christian. Virtue for revolutionists resides at the bottom, in chaos, and it institutes chaos to destroy the old order and the men and women belonging to it. Mass murders become a virtue. The word purge from the French Revolution meant an enema, to eliminate feces. It has since gained as its primary meaning the elimination of leading citizens, capitalists, and Christians. Revolutions and purges are inescapable in non-Christian orders. Their faith requires it. Such mindless mass murders cannot be eliminated unless creationism replaces evolution. We cannot understand the 20th century unless we recognize the determining influence of Charles Darwin on men like Marx, Freud, Nietzsche, Stalin, Trotsky, Hitler, Mao Tse-tung, Dewey, F.D. Roosevelt, Mussolini, Churchill, and others. I have twice had criminals argue with me on the invalidity of any judgment of them because of the truth of evolution. The revitalization of society for evolutionists is from below, out of revolution, chaos, and anarchy. The upheavals of the 20th century are the logical products of Rousseau, Hegel, and Darwin, who idolized and enthroned power from below. We are undergoing what Cornelius Van Til called integration downward into the void. The vision of God has been replaced in the 20th century by the vision of chaos, of integration downward. Genesis 1 defines God as the creator. Verses 26 through 28 define man as a created in the image of God. And according to the Westminster Shorter Catechism, question number 10, how did God create man? God created man, male and female, after his own image, Genesis 1:27, in knowledge, righteousness, and holiness, Colossians 3:10, Ephesians 4:24, with dominion over the creatures, Genesis 1:28. The definition of man is the definition of man's life. It is dangerous to overlook this fact. Man no longer sees himself as God's creation, made in his image. They see humanity in Darwinian terms. Over the years, I've heard of a variety of such definitions, from man defined as a perpetually rutting animal to man as an example of evolutionary error. To define man in Darwinian terms as a, quote, higher ape, it is to strip man of his high seriousness, to declare man to be a creature made in God's image but fallen. It is to stress his high potential as well as his present depravity outside of Christ. Even as Adam defines the old humanity of fallen man, so Jesus Christ in his perfect and sinless humanity defines the goal for redeemed man. Genesis 1 makes clear that the creation of man was God's sovereign act. According to Ephesians 2:8, quote, "For by grace are you saved through faith, that not of yourselves, it is a gift of God," unquote. In our time, people are schooled in terms of evolutionary process, that they can only view the future in like terms. Growth and process are related terms. They are sometimes used interchangeably, but they are not the same. Growth implies life and development, whereas process implies mechanical or mindless change, which can include death and decay. Process thinking tends to exclude God's power and grace and man's purposeful activity. Process thinking views the future in Darwinian terms, a slow change, not as God's work in history. It views possible changes in history in biological and mechanical terms. Examples of this is a belief that, like organisms, cultures rise and decay, or that some mechanical pendulum will bring about social reversals. Process thinking is the antithesis of biblical faith and thought. Not only has Darwinian process thinking infected sociology and psychology, but we now have process theologies. Once creationism is dropped, process replaces grace in theology and life. A humanistic pastoral psychology replaces biblical counseling. Creation must be viewed as the act of the personal and triune God, not as a process of nature. Although process and revolution seem to be contradictory concepts, they are related. Both presuppose power from below. Their premises are identical. The outworking thereof is different. The biblical doctrine of origins declares that the creative act and power came from above, from God. We must therefore look to God for all that follows. God saw his creation as, quote, very good, unquote, Genesis 1:31. And the disorder that followed came about because man sought to shift the motivation and power to himself, Genesis 3:1-5. The essential premises of sound thinking are in Genesis 1. To neglect this chapter as foundational to life and theology is to create a false religion. Before man and the universe, there is God. To understand man and the universe, we must look to God and his infallible word.